The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with John Couch. John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program today. And together we welcome you to Buckmaster on this Tuesday, the 9th of July, 2019. Hope the week is off to a good start for you. You're on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We have all of our programs podcast for you. They're all archived, very convenient, easy to use, buckmastershow.com. The live line number 790-2040 if you'd like to join in the conversation, and we'll get right into it on this Tuesday afternoon. Rob Elias is with me. Rob is one of four Democrats hoping to become the Ward 1 representative in Ward 1, that primary, a four-way primary. The winner pretty much... And there might be a write-in who might get enough votes to get on the ballot, but more than likely, who wins the Democratic primary will go on to be the Ward 1 councilperson. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the program. For folks that don't know Rob Elias, he's a Tucson guy, went to the University of Arizona, was a good baseball player, played professional baseball for a couple of years. He currently is over at the award-winning Tucson Botanical Garden, where I happen to be a member. I think they do a great job over there. Rob is the director of marketing and communications, and he also owns a consulting practice helping out small businesses. Rob, why politics? Why did you decide to jump into this thing?
No, that's a great question, Bill. And I think the reason I decided to get into politics now is because I care deeply about this community. I love this city. It's helped me grow exponentially while here in Tucson, and I really see what it's capable of becoming. And I really want to be a part of helping shape our future so that my 10-year-old daughter can enjoy Tucson and, you know, your family can stay in Tucson, and we see this community thrive together.
You say right on your website, I want every person in Tucson to have the opportunity to succeed. How do you do that?
By creating more opportunities, and not just by bringing more businesses to Tucson that bring better jobs to Tucson, but growing organically through the small businesses that we already have here. As we all know, that Tucson is primarily small business, 65-70% small business. We can provide more resources to help those businesses thrive and grow organically. These people have already bought into Tucson. They fall in love with the uniqueness and the heritage and the cultures that we have here. If we give them more tools to make their business grow, I think the better off we'll be.
What separates you from your three opponents in this race?
Well, nothing against my three opponents. I think they're fantastic people. My experience that I've had being in business in Tucson for the better part of two decades in a leadership capacity, it's taught me how to be a good listener. I didn't become a vice president of a credit union at 25 because I talked well. I became a vice president at 25 because I listened well. And that's something that has helped me through this process. And I've learned how to solve complex problems in a methodical, pragmatic way. And I think that's something that this position requires.
Why did you choose to reside in Ward 1?
Oh, I love the West Side. I love the Tucson West Side. The views are just stunning from the West Side. It has everything you need. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see I'm at the Mercado all the time. I'm at St. Mary's Tortilla Factory all the time, probably too much. But it's so close to everything. I'm, you know, minutes away from downtown. I'm minutes away to getting on the freeway and going as far east as I want, as far north as I want. So close to university. It's just a great area of town to be in, and I just love it.
You know, the thing about Tucson, it's like wherever you are, you're going to have kind of a different look of the area. You can be up in Oro Valley and you're looking at a different side of the Catalinas, and it doesn't even look like where I live in the central foothills looking at the Catalinas, and it looks different where you live. So it's very kind of an interesting dynamic
it
there
really
when
is.
It comes to our scenic splendor that we have here in southern Arizona. So you would put job creation definitely, Rob Elias, at the top of the agenda.
I absolutely would.
But again, tell me about how you're going to make that happen.
So let's use a business analogy here, Bill. When you are being recruited to a business, or you have been recruited and you accept a position, the first thing you do is you go through new employee orientation, right? So they're going to tell you about the values of the company, what the common purpose is, what their job is within the community. And cities shouldn't run much differently than that. When we try to attract new businesses to Tucson, we tell people what we stand for, what our values are, what our common purpose is, the culture and uniqueness and beauty of Tucson, and in hopes that we attract companies that believe in those same things. So if we can do a better job of expressing what our shared values are, what our common purpose is, I think we'll begin to attract those types of companies, and they'll look at Tucson in a much different light, and we'll bring in new businesses, but also reinvigorate the small business that is already thriving in Tucson, provided they're giving adequate resources.
Have you thought about politics before, but what made this feel right for you this time, Rob?
Yeah, I've always loved politics.
You followed it even
as a very young person. Yeah. So I blame my dad for that. My dad was an American history teacher down in Sahuarita High School for almost 40 years. And he, I guess, instilled in me the bug of American history. I love everything about it, including the good and the bad that comes with politics. So I see the potential that Tucson has, and I desperately want a seat at that table to help lead it into prosperity.
One of the dividing factors in the Ward 1 race is this Sanctuary City initiative that will be on the ballot in November. Have you taken a position on that?
I certainly have, and I will leave a little asterisk because I'm learning more about it, and I'm looking forward to sitting down with the organizers of this measure and learning more about it. The stance that I've taken at this time is that I'm opposed to it, but inevitably it's the will of the voters, and I certainly congratulate their efforts and what they've done. They've organized tremendously well, and they've made a lot of leeway into bringing awareness to a topic that is very important. And so the voters will possibly be able to decide in November whether Tucson becomes a sanctuary city. If we are, we will face consequences at the state level. And if that's a fight that the citizens of Tucson want us to have, then that's a fight that we will take up. And I will be 100% behind it at the time.
Is Ward 1 getting the amenities they should be?
Can you further define amenities?
Seat at the table at the council.
That's a really difficult question. I believe it is. I believe that Councilmember Romero has done a fair job during her time as the council member. I wish her luck in her race running for mayor. But she has not done things the way I would do them. And again, not speaking negatively about her in any way, I think the citizens of Ward 1 need to have a bigger seat at the table, not just the council member. The will of the citizens in Ward 1 need to be heard, their suggestions, their concerns, their ideas, and their thoughts. And I would like to open up that accessibility to the Ward 1 office so that I can get people from all walks of life. And that's the beauty about Ward 1, is it has so many pockets of beauty and heritage and culture. And all of their thoughts and ideas need to be expressed and listened to.
Rob Elias is with us, Ward 1 Democrat, one of four running in that very interesting race. Winner will probably be the new council person in Ward 1. How has this been for you personally, running for office? It's time consuming, to say the least.
Yes, it very much is. But you know, the thing, I was having a conversation the other day with somebody, and I was using the opportunity to vent a little bit and say just the things that we have all done as candidates that are running, and we all have families, and we take time out of our evenings, most days out of the week, to go and campaign. But the thing that keeps me inspired to do it every day is the people that I get a chance to meet, the faces that I talk to, and hearing their ideas. And I want to win this race so badly, not because of me, not because I want to be in charge, just because I want to take care of the people within my charge. And I think that is a huge differentiator and why I want to win this race. It's the people that inspire me to do this. It's the face of my 10-year-old daughter that has the enthusiasm and the hope for Tucson. And I really want Tucson to be prosperous for her and for everybody's family.
Where can people find out more about you, Rob?
Yeah, you can go to my website, EliasForTucson.com, and it's for as in F-O-R, not the number. You can follow me on Facebook, EliasForTucson, or my Instagram as well, EliasForTucson.
Thank you very much, Rob.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All the best to you. My favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Check out Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. And of course, they're doing breakfast now. Owner and chief baker Steve has all the new equipment in. They've got the new grill in. 6:30 each morning, they're open for breakfast, and they do a great breakfast. You can have everything you could dream of, pretty much. Great blueberry pancakes. I like those chocolate pancakes as well. Got the eggs and all of the things that go with breakfast, and of course the bakery case, all the danishes, and those great almond croissants. Making me hungry just thinking about it. Mona's is open right now. If you want to do breakfast now, that's fine. Or how about lunch? Those sandwiches, the breads. Oh my goodness, the bread came out of the oven just a few hours ago, and it's ready for you now. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Also a link at BuckmasterShow.com. Be right back with Shelley Fishman. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor professional. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
And what say we consult right now with Shelley Fishman, certified financial planner. Shelley, how are you? How is your 4th of July holiday?
4th of July holiday up in San Francisco.
I heard you
Let's
had a
just
great
say
trip
we
up
walked
there.
A lot.
Yeah, I bet you had a great trip. The weather was nice and cool.
It's
right?
San Francisco in the summer.
Well, there you go.
It's like perfect.
Yeah, can be rather chilly in San Francisco in the summer. The kind of a chilly reception on Friday to a positive jobs report. In the old days, it seems like good news used to mean good news on Wall Street would translate into upside.
Well,
not
the old
anymore.
Days are gone.
Yeah,
Bill.
I guess so.
So
now it's reading into stuff.
Yeah, what we saw was a change from the prior 2 months that had been really very disappointing in terms of jobs. And then those 2 months were even modified down a little bit from the already mediocre performance in April and May. But the economists were all expecting about 160,000, 170,000 jobs to have been created in June. And instead, we had 224,000. So that surprised everybody to the upside. The unemployment rate actually clicked up one tick to 3.7%, but that's probably because more people were reporting to have been looking for jobs or re-entering the job market. And so, in general, the market kind of panicked a little bit and said, wait a second, if the economy is doing as well as this jobs report would indicate, that means the Fed isn't going to lower rates. So if they don't lower rates, that means stocks won't go up as much as we think they're going to go up. And so stocks tanked on Friday and yesterday and today.
Well, all of this leads many investors, I think, to be thinking about the next economic storm.
Absolutely, Bill. And so that
it's a matter of time.
You can think about this from month to month or week to week, but what's really going on here is the optimism around corporate profits that was generated mostly by the tax cuts, the corporate tax cuts from a year ago, that has begun to fade. And so, listen, I'm not complaining about a market that's up 18 or 19% year to date. We haven't had a market that good since, gosh, 1996 or something like that.
Really?
The question is, what does the market really build into its pricing information? And what we're seeing is good corporate profits, and so that's reflected in higher stock prices, but a lot of cautions as to what might happen in the future. And we're seeing reports from economists now that are actually beginning to think that the recession that everybody knows is coming from a corporate earnings perspective might already be here.
Mm.
Now, if you define a recession as two straight quarters of reduction in growth from what had been a year earlier, and mm-hmm. that's not the only way to define a mm-hmm. recession, but that's one way. We're already pretty much there in terms of corporate profits. So what we've had is some really mediocre results in the earnings of the S&P 500. And in fact, the first quarter was down almost 0.3% in earnings per share from the prior year. And it looks like we could go down as much as 13% in the second quarter in earnings from the prior year. Now, that's not to say that the corporations aren't making money. It's to say that their earnings are reduced from the prior year. And when you take a look at how people view growth and view the value of stocks, when earnings go down and are reduced from period over period over period, that's a warning sign. And so what we're seeing from economists now is this speculation that perhaps the economy isn't quite as resilient as it appears to be on the surface, especially taking a look at the jobs report. And I think the first indication that that's going to be problematic is going to be the second quarter GDP growth report.
Is that a leading indicator, two quarters with corporate profits down? Is that a leading indicator of
yes.
recession?
So if the stock market is viewed as a leading indicator, mm-hmm. then if the price of stocks reacts badly to weaker profits, mm-hmm. then you can see going forward that the leading indicator myth about the market would be predictive of a slowdown in the economy. If we see GDP growth in the second quarter down at around 2%, I think some alarm bells will begin to go off. Remember, we had a not bad series of quarters last year, but those were propped up by the sugar high of that tax cut. And what's happened, especially on the corporate side, is that corporations have a lot of cash now. They're reporting it as profits because, in fact, it is profits. They're not paying it in taxes, but they've got nothing to do with the money.
Right.
There's no place to invest that money. Europe and Asia have slowed down. We're not seeing large increases in plant and manufacturing capabilities here in this country. So what companies are doing is returning those profits to the shareholders. So they're returning it in terms of buying back stocks or in paying dividends. And eventually, that has an effect on the growth of the economy. Because if we're not seeing increases, large increases in employment, if we're not seeing large increases in productivity, if we're not seeing large increases in the investment of capital into the economy, if we're not into the business economy, and if we're not seeing large investments in infrastructure made by the government, then that is by definition the elements of a slowdown. And that could lead to a recession this year rather than next. And that recession might be more difficult for the Fed to manage our way out of because the Fed's leverage, and by the way, this is not just the Fed, this is also European central banks, they just have nowhere to go. The president is complaining that the Fed has raised interest rates too much, but the Fed needs some leverage, and the leverage that they have is being able to manipulate interest rates, short-term interest rates.
And they're pretty much scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Well, certainly in Europe they are, yeah. where interest rates are at zero or in
zero.
Some cases a negative a quarter. Here in this country, the interest rates are floating around 2%, 2.25%, which would give them some flexibility. The problem is, and this gets into the weeds a little bit, the interest rate curve has inverted a little bit. So what's happening buyers are actually paying more for shorter-term debt than for long-term debt. And so if you start bringing the interest rate down in short-term debt, it could really make long-term debt very unattractive. And that is, of course, the debt that corporations use when they start reinvesting and borrowing.
When was the last recession?
The last recession was 2008. And it was one of the deepest recessions we've ever had. Mm-hmm. Now, we've had some slowdowns. We've had some corrections in the market. But we're 10 years out from a recession, actually 11 years out from a recession right now.
So that's
and
pretty
so we're
long,
kind of due
right?
for one.
Long time.
Absolutely. And so the question, if you're an investor, is you take a look at 18, 19% year-to-date gains.
Right.
And you say, gosh, I want to participate in that. I want to be invested in that. Mm-hmm. But then you take a look at the possibility of that all coming crashing down for
right.
a while. And and so you got to hedge your bets somewhat. And that's really what I'm counseling my clients that they really need to be doing. You want to participate in the growth, but at the same time, you want to take chunks of cash and keep it off to the side, either invested in bonds or left in cash, so that when a slowdown happens, when we see a reduction in prices, you have the ability to reinvest in the market at those lower prices so that you can recover more quickly. Now, that's, you know, easy to say if you're a 70-year-old, a 65-year-old, where you can do that. If you're a 30-year-old, 35-year-old, and you're in one of the 50% of this country who's invested in stocks, and you're fortunate enough to be able to do that, then you should be ignoring all of this stuff. Keep it invested, you know, as aggressively as your gut will allow you to accept risk. And don't look at your reports from quarter to quarter, because you're not going to touch that money until you're in your 60s.
And then you're looking at the long run.
You have to be looking at the long run. Otherwise, you're not investing, you're gambling. And, you know, you can do that as well in Las Vegas.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. There was an article, too, you wanted to point folks to.
Yeah, there's two.
Real quickly, if you would,
there's,
please.
Both from MarketWatch. One was a week ago from Quentin Petrell, and the article is entitled "Scarred by the Great Recession, Americans Are Already Preparing for the Next Economic Storm." And then just this morning, Tommy Kilgore wrote, "An earnings recession looms for the first time in 3 years." Mm-hmm. So we're beginning to see this pessimism creep into the general press. And, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, but there it is.
All right, Shelley, have a great week.
You too, Bill.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of Securities America or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor in private practice here in Tucson. Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through PFG Advisors. Securities America and PFG Advisors are separate entities.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, this portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. What a nice area of the southwestern United States in the southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment. You know, they've got their big event coming up next week. It's the Silver City Clay Festival. And as the name implies, it's everything to do with clay and pottery. The festival features hands-on workshops, exhibits, tours. There'll be a clay fest market, some great pottery coming up over in Silver City next week. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of the very nice places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. And by the way, here's the best part. It's that 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. It's going to be cooler over in Silver City. Let's welcome now Adelita Grijalva, the new president of the TUSD governing board. Adelita, good to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
This is your fourth time as the president of the TUSD governing board. How did that work? We had Dr. Mark Stegeman, his 6-month term, and normally these things are like a 1-year deal.
They are.
But he got 6 months, and now it's your turn for 6 months. Wasn't there some talk about Crystal Foster, who, by the way, will join us later in the half hour? She has not been the board president, and I believe she's been on the board 7 years.
That is true, and I think that she would
do
a good
Ms.
job
Foster
as president.
Passed, why was Ms. Foster passed over?
I'm not sure, but I think that I'm happy that we had a majority that was willing to vote for me, and my hope is that, you know, we get through every agenda, every board meeting, and make sure that our community is right there with us.
What's this about Dr. Stegeman walking out a little bit after 10 at a recent board meeting? He told members of the media that these meetings are just going too long.
Well, that's his responsibility, though, as board president, to make sure that every board member speaks on the issue and that we move on to the next item. And I think that that is a challenge with our board, but it's something that I'm hoping we'll be able to accomplish over the next 6 months, that we're able to get out of our meetings. What would be great is before 10 o'clock. But when Mr. Hicks was on the board, they enacted a curfew. And so it's happened before. It's just interesting that the media caught it this time, because we did have a lot of pretty significant items that we were voting on, including the code of conduct, which he has been very critical of in the past.
And what was the vote?
Unanimous, 4-0.
How will that change things, the code of conduct?
I think that it's just giving a lot more clarity and professional development around restorative practices and what that means, and providing support and to teachers who might be struggling and principals who are new to the position or maybe not as familiar with some of the nuances of what it looks like now. But some of the biggest changes are escalating from a level 1 to a level 3 if it's a repeat offense, which has been a criticism before. And so I think that it will allow staff and teachers to feel like they have much more control over how discipline is implemented. But ultimately what we want is these students to learn from their mistakes and be able to go back to class. I mean, avoiding expulsion and suspensions and out of class discipline as much as possible is the goal.
Good news. The state of Arizona owes TUSD $8.5 million after a judge said that tax on homeowners is illegal. Without going into all the details about this, basically what's happened is the state owes TUSD $8.5 million, and this is good news for taxpayers.
It is, and this is something that, you know, we are not the only school district under a court ordered desegregation, and the transparency regarding the deseg budget is really clear, and we have many people that are a part of it, including the two plaintiff classes, the special master, Dr. Holly, and the judge. And so if anyone is ever curious about what that budget looks like, it is available in many different locations, including Superior Court and and TUSD's website.
That thing's been going on forever.
40 years,
and 40 years. Mm-hmm. You know, that may be one of the longest running deseg orders in the United States.
I think active deseg orders, I would say yes, because there were other schools that have, you know, post-unitary funding, mm-hmm. but they're not under an active court order, and we are. And I think one of the issues is when the finish line keeps moving, it's difficult to get there. And so my hope is that we're getting closer to the point where the programs that we're implementing are really going to serve the children in our schools. And that's the hope. But it has been since I attended TUSD schools.
If it goes away, what impact does that have on your budget?
The active court order shouldn't have an impact. I mean, really, it should just allow the board to make more of those decisions. But as far as funding, I think the goal is, in order for us not to become segregated again, that the funding will continue. And that's what has happened in other school districts in the past, even in Arizona. So my hope is that that's what happens for TUSD.
Adelita Grijalva with us, the president of the TUSD Governing Board on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Believe it or not, school will be reopening here in a few weeks.
It's 23 days. My children are counting down.
It's 23 days. Yep. So school's going to begin like in early August this year. So this meeting tonight is very, very important that the board is having. This is about the budget and how the district is going to fund the next 12 months.
Yes, it is. And so I think that this conversation tonight will really talk about specific departments, some of the recommendations from administration on increasing the number of counselors in our schools, specifically targeted at middle schools. And so this is where we're talking class size and real specifics and the things that people want to know about how the funding is going to be distributed in our schools.
How is the budget looking?
We have had a decline in enrollment.
You had to pass a budget package because of the way you're required at the fiscal year to pass.
Right. So we pass our budget capacity, but the details are things that we can still continue to adjust as a board if we need to.
790-2040 for comments or questions for Adelita Grijalva. Is Chuck ready to go? All right. Chuck called us. He would like to speak with Adelita. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, Ms. Grijalva.
Hi.
I understand that the TUSD board is going to be taking a vote sometime this month on a new sex education curriculum.
Yes.
Involving fourth graders to eighth graders and I guess a year in high school to pass, get their diploma. Can you give me a little insight in this and what it's all about?
Yeah, so basically we haven't made any changes to the sex education curriculum in 20 years. And so we want to make sure that it's inclusive, medically accurate, and comprehensive. And so we have had a committee working for over, I think it's almost 2 years, on revising our curriculum and making sure that it speaks to every child in our schools. And so now that the law has been eliminated where we can talk about every sexuality, I think that it will be more meaningful. And this was something that was really driven by students who came to the board and said, what you're teaching us is not medically accurate, nor is it comprehensive, nor is it helpful at all. And so we really took our direction and our charge from those students, and we're going to have a discussion, not at this meeting, but the next meeting on July 23rd.
It's been 20 years?
Apparently. But I mean, where we've had wholesale changes to our family life curriculum, it's been pretty soon. And my children have been in the schools, their entire education. And my daughter, who is going into seventh grade, has not had any lesson in family life. So I think that it's something that we really have to make sure we roll out comprehensively. And it's going to be one of the concerns that I bring up.
The governor and the legislature have been touting their decision to invest $660 million new dollars from the state's general fund into public education. Is that just a drop in the bucket, Adelita Grijalva?
It really is. I mean, just if you look at capital funds alone in the last 10 years, TUSD has been cut over $100 million. And so when people say, well, your HVAC isn't working and, you know, your schools look older.
Yeah, people say the lawmakers are giving the teachers what they want. Why are the teachers complaining? They get everything they need now. The crisis is over. You know, you're hearing
well,
it.
Well, we're still 49th. In the states for funding. I mean, so to say that we are competitive at all, I think that, it's a systematic attack on public education. And what would be interesting to see is when you unpack that $660 million, where those dollars are specifically targeted, and most of them are likely to be in charter and private education.
And very little goes to infrastructure. Let's face it, the TUSD is not alone in school districts across Arizona that have terrible infrastructure requirements that need filling.
Well, we do, and we're also one of the oldest districts. I mean, one of our schools is over 100 years old.
Which one is that?
Tucson High.
What?
Yes. Tucson High. We have several, but Tucson High is our, you know, premier magnet. It's kind of our flagship program because we have so many students that want to go there. But the needs there are really significant. And so, you know, when we look at some of the things that we have to remedy and correct, it's overwhelming. And some of the districts that have cropped up around us are a lot newer, but they still get the same per pupil funding in capital that TUSD does, even though our buildings are 100 years old and theirs are 10.
Especially when it's back to school in early August. Boy, the AC better be working or that's going to be a huge problem.
I know. That's true.
We'll pause right here. Crystal Foster, TUSD board member, will be joining us via the telephone in a few minutes. Adelita will stick around. But right now, Adelita, I want to tell our Buckmaster Show listeners about my favorite nursery in town. That's Green Things. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Adelita, have you been over there to Green Things?
I do not have a green thumb, I do not. But I admire others that do.
The 13-acre site is now home. It's expanded. They've got all this great merchandise from Zocalo. For years, Zocalo was over by Country Club and Broadway, all that great handmade furniture from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Well, they're now part of the Green Things family. There are now five shops at what's being called Zocalo Village at Green Things. Go check it out. The website is greenthingsaz.com. Back with Adelita Grijalva and Crystal Foster right after this.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Adelita Grijalva, TUSD Board President, with me in studio. And on the live line now, we're joined by Crystal Foster, TUSD Governing Board Member. Crystal, how are you?
I'm good. Good afternoon.
Well, I wanted to save this for when you were on the line so I can ask both of you to weigh in. The number one issue here as we get ready to open up school in just, what did you say, Adelita?
23 days.
23 days. Mm-hmm. Is it, and I'd like you both to weigh in, is it stopping the hemorrhaging of the enrollment crisis? We'll begin with you, Crystal Foster.
I think the most important issue that we have is to really develop a strategic plan that would, of course, incorporate the enrollment loss and have a plan to change that, to rectify that. And it's sad to me that I was hoping in January that we would start that right after the new board was configured and we would get right on track with the new vision and a new direction. It's really tough as a board when we don't have those shared ideas and shared projects and plans that we agree to, that because then we can vote accordingly with our budget and with the decisions that we make. It makes everything much more productive as well. And so I think incorporating that, of course, the enrollment loss, is we have to get on board with a new strategic plan.
What do you think, Adelita?
I totally agree. And we have had... right before Dr. Sanchez left TUSD, we did have a flat line of enrollment loss. And so we were gaining students, not losing them as often. And I do think that it's more comprehensive than just let's keep kids. Like, we have to make sure that the district is responsive to their needs. And we really have to turn the tide on a lot of the negativity. And, you know, unfortunately, we have some board members that feed into that. And so I think that if we are elected to this position, that it is our job to do the best we can to improve the district. And that is something that, you know, all of us should take very seriously.
By not getting on the same page, is that derailing this whole vision?
I think not getting on the same page to even have the conversation of the strategic plan, that is disheartening. And so at least now we have a majority that really wants to make sure that we lay out a plan. Because how can we expect our superintendent to meet the objectives that we want him to if we haven't laid them out? And that's been consistent for the last 2.5 years. You know, we sort of throw out these goals that really have no tie back to what everyone in the district should be doing. And that's something that employees and the community have been asking for, so I'm glad that we're moving forward on that.
Crystal Foster, what should be number one on that strategic plan?
Number one should be involving our community to be a part of crafting that vision. We had done that earlier when I started on the board, and it was such an uplifting and positive experience. It reengages people in public schools, in TUSD. They become advocates and fans of the district rather than adversaries when they know what's going on, when their voice and their ideas contribute to that plan. And to piggyback on what Ms. Grijalva said is, when you don't have a strategic plan, and like it has to come from our community, right? What does Tucson want for this district? And if we don't have an agreed upon plan, then a superintendent, really the only thing he or she can do is to make five board members happy. That's knowing, as contentious as our board is, that's pulling leadership in every single direction. And what I think that's done for us is we've really just been spinning in circles rather than having agreed upon, to have the leader be able to say, well, this is the plan and this is why what we agreed upon. And so this is why we're moving in this direction. And I think especially with a board like ours, if we have that agreed upon plan, then that's where the work and the conversation and everything is around that. And again, that coming from the community. And then it doesn't get back and forth into what individual board members are advocating for or wanting. It's the best way to unify us and to bring us together to best serve our kids and our community.
How is the newest board member, Adelita Grijalva, how has she changed, or has she changed the dynamic of your board, of your five-member board?
Oh, the dynamic has changed pretty significantly, I think. She is interested in a lot of the same issues that I am. We have very similar backgrounds in the kind of work that we do.
And we're speaking
Layla Counts.
Layla Counts. Mm-hmm. And how is she doing, in your opinion?
I think that she is trying to get a grasp on all of the cogs in the wheel. I mean, we have so many different departments, and so I know that she's been working really hard to get familiar with those. And she's asking a lot of questions that I think are important. This next meeting, once we reorganize a little bit on the dais, she'll be sitting next to the superintendent. So some of those logistical questions that people don't necessarily want to pull a mic to their face to ask, she'll be able to just like kind of tap him. He'll be right next to her. And so I think that will kind of help in that regard as well.
What do you think, Crystal Foster? How has she done?
We think if we compare her with our former board member, Mr. Hicks, I like Mr. Hicks. I like his advocacy for sports and his energy, but that energy would go, could get kind of bolsterous at times. And Layla's much more calming and much more focused, I think, on, and I like to appreciate that she has young children in the district. I know Mike had a student ready to graduate, and so having a board member with young children and really invested, mind, body, and soul into what happens to this district for her young children. Also on the east side where Mike had kids, and so I appreciate that we have representation on the board from parents from both the east and the west side. We have an educator on the board. I think that's really important, and I hope we have a board election again in 2020, and I hope people really think about, okay, we have these two parents from each side of the district, and what other kind of representation do we need that will really help make the best decisions and really show that they have a true commitment and truly want to see the district change for the better.
What seats are up in 2020?
Ms. Foster's, Dr. Stegeman, and Ms. Sedgwick.
Okay. Teacher shortage, how does it look, Adelita Grijalva, with school opening in a couple of weeks? As you pointed out, 23 days.
23 days. I think the last bit of information that we received from the superintendent that we're on track, consistent to the vacancies that we had the previous year, maybe a little less. My hope is that we are able to fill those, but we have a teacher shortage nationally, and so mm-hmm. we're feeling the effects here, definitely.
Crystal,
with that said, I think we're making a lot of creative changes. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I know on our agenda this evening something that we want to do that other districts don't do is we want to pay for fingerprinting cards. And there's little things that do have you have to pay for as part of the application process, both for our certified and our classified staff. And I hope the board will support that this evening, I think, with that creative idea around how do we make it easier to apply and to accept a job at our district. I think that's a positive that will help as well.
Mm-hmm. All the pre-employment kind of, lift test, drug screening, CPR first aid.
So it streamlines the process a bit, that it helps economically, might make it a little easier for
people. Well, if we have someone who's applying for a job that's paying minimum wage and asking them to come out of pocket $140. Yeah. We might not be the most attractive option for them. But if we pay for those expenses up front, we also get a commitment from those employees to stay for at least 6 months. Otherwise, they'll reimburse the district with their last check. And so I think it's a win for everybody. And we also fill these vacancies so we don't have to pay overtime to some employees that are being taxed when those jobs aren't filled.
All right, Crystal Foster, thank you for joining us. I know you had a very important luncheon going on today, and I appreciate you stepping away for a few minutes so you could join in our conversation about
I always appreciate being invited to your show and to talk about our district.
Yep. Well, and we'll see you at 4 o'clock.
Meeting coming up. And Adelita, thank you very much.
Thank
you. Congratulations on your next term here, at least for the next 6 months.
All right.
That will do it for the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Coming up tomorrow, a deep dive into the Pima County Board of Supervisors meetings they've been having recently about their budget. Steve Christie will be my guest. That's going to do it for Buckmaster. On behalf of Adelita Grijalva, with me in studio, and John Couch on the other side of the glass, have a great afternoon and evening.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station.
This is CBS.